Hello, this is the Dot Matrix, and I'm Sean.
I'm Justin.
And welcome to our first podcast of 2012. I'm excited that we managed to do this in January.
Yes, it is January, and it is episode 47, so our lofty rhetoric around doing 50 by the end of the year didn't quite materialize as we hoped.
We're behind by 3, so maybe by
the end... Said that she did. Oh, I don't
even... No, there's got to be a joke in there somewhere.
Yeah.
Everything can be a said that she did. Thanks, Yoda. So hopefully by the end of 2012, we'll have done a respectable 12 episodes. It's one a month, though, so I don't know.
That's pretty lofty.
But then...
What happens if one of us goes on vacation?
Well, that's just it. I don't know if I'll be leaving for more than a week at a time, but you go on these cross-province type of things weeks at a time, so...
Well, last year I didn't really do much traveling at all, and so this year, actually, I do have in my mind to go somewhere.
You just don't know yet?
I don't know quite yet. I know Vanessa and I are bandying about the idea of maybe going to China,
ooh,
visiting our cousin there in Beijing.
Nice.
And I think I might try to do one more trip after that too. So
maybe Caribbean.
Yeah, you know, I always dream about that, but I don't think it's in the cards yet. I just don't feel it. But I'm trying to figure out whether or not, like, I'll go to New York for a work conference thing. I haven't quite figured it out yet, so. That's potentially in the horizon, in a couple of months maybe. So.
Oh, awesome! Yeah.
I was going to tell you about it, but I totally forgot over dinner. We just had dinner, of course. For those of you who really want to care about our lives, we had dinner right before we did the podcast.
Well, come on, we got to tell them we had some, or what some people say is pho. So Vietnamese noodles, pho.
Pho. That's what I usually say.
I always say pho. I can't say pho. It just doesn't
or
work.
Pho.
Pho. So, well, and I think I texted you once about going, I'm going to be going to Ucluelet. Or I think I wrote that in an email.
You wrote that in an email, that's right. Yeah.
So that's kind of crazy, huh?
Yeah.
Very excited about that. It's right. Just a long weekend, but there was a really good Groupon that came out, and Elaine jumped on it. And for like 200 something, it's like, I think it's 2 nights at this Black Rock Resort.
Okay.
Free bottle of wine. And a $50 voucher at some restaurant in the...
Oh, nice.
At the resort.
Nice.
So it's just like, when you add all the value of everything, like it would be much, much more, apparently. I think there's stuff I'm forgetting, but those are the main items. I think, like, you know, we can bring Dexter, our dog, so, like, all that kind of stuff. No extra charges and...
Right.
Helpful. So yeah. So that's what's happening with that. So that should be fun. That's in June.
Nice.
We're probably going to go to the Okanagan with our sister-in-law Claire, because Claire and myself both really love wine, which I think I may have mentioned, at least for myself. Right?
A few times in person with me, and also to our 5 listeners out there.
Our 5 listeners. Thank you, 5 listeners. And hopefully I don't bore you with this story, but we're hoping to make it out there.
Just kidding. Okay, yeah.
Only because, Elaine's brother, her husband, might be away for a while in the spring. So if that does happen, we'll just head over again for just like a long weekend. Claire hasn't seen the Okanagan, and every person in this province who loves wine needs to find a way to go to the Okanagan at some point, because it's really good right now because it hasn't been kind of violated, you know what I mean? Like a lot of touristy places, like there's a time when it's really cool,
right?
Not too many people are there all the time.
Yeah.
they're still making great quality wine, and they're not running into this thing with other countries have had where there's no overproduction yet, you know, and wine quality goes down. And
oh, okay.
They're really, really trying to maintain the quality. They're trying to just, you know, do cool new things, but trying to respect the land and all that kind of stuff. So it's a good time to go. It's a good era to go, is kind of what I'm getting at.
Nice.
Yeah.
So, wow.
Trip-wise, that's what we're doing.
Wow. Nice.
Yeah, it should be a lot of fun. So we have probably a lot to go over, but...
Yes, it's been a while.
What comes to your mind first?
Well, you know, the only thing on my list is you have two things on your list, is the fact that the reason why we're recording our podcast today here at my place, because my PVR worked and yours failed.
I can't believe that.
Well, yeah. I've had that happen to me too. And even like on Sunday, we were, Vanessa was trying to PVR the Golden Globes, but for some reason it didn't record the first hour.
Oh, that's odd.
And that's really dumb. Is that what you want to see? You want to, because curious about Ricky Gervais's opening and how he's going to lambaste who and how.
Yeah.
And apparently it's on YouTube, so I have to go find it on YouTube. Sure. But my PVR worked, and because to record Bill Moyers back on television.
Can't believe it.
Whatever I was watching, I was stunned. Stunned. Where the commercial came on, and I was watching something on KCTS. And then it came, and there's a Bill Moyers sign. I'm like, what?
Which is our PBS affiliate, I think, KCTS, right?
Right, yes. And as everyone, the five people, know, we totally rave about Bill Moyers and his, you know, show, which is, you know, available via podcast, but also, you know, you can PVR it and stuff. Just brilliant, right? And I was so thrilled. Like, he's... And I watched the very beginning of it just to make sure it taped when I came back on Sunday. And it did. And the set's the same. It's the same set, but it's the new show called Moyers and Company. It's not like Bill Moyers Journal anymore, right? It's something different. So.
Just kind of a rebranding, so to speak.
Yeah, yeah. So
is it like, it's the company as in his guests, or there's other his panelists? Guests.
No, it's his, no, yeah.
His
yeah.
show.
Yeah, it's his show.
It's not one of those things like, you know what I mean, right? Where they bring something back, but it's not quite what it should be.
Yeah, yeah. No. It's okay. At least from what I could tell, and you know, and I've read the preview, the description of the one that's on, and then the one that's next week, or this Sunday, yeah. Just sounds very fascinating. I can't wait for us to. I was going to say to finish this podcast, but you know, we're going to enjoy every moment of recording this. And then sink our teeth in some good Bill Moyers.
Nice. I can't wait. I'm so excited about that. Because you know what the great thing about that is? Amongst many great things about his show and his journalism and his skills as a communicator is even if he has a guest on his show that we may have not have heard of, we get to learn about someone very... someone new that's very fascinating. You know, and it might have nothing really much to do about our lives over here. It might be about someone in like South Carolina, or it might be someone, you know,
right,
upstate New York, or you know, Nebraska. Who knows? Like, it someone making a difference in their neighborhood, or even if it's not that, it could be something of an artistic nature. Someone just
or something a completely different field than what we've either been exposed to or even have ever been interested in. Right?
Exactly. So that's really cool. Well, I'm very excited for that.
Yeah, so I'm thrilled. And then the other thing, of course, is I texted you in shock when I heard that Christiane Amanpour got fired from This Week.
I really like her and her accent.
Her accent is fabulous.
Yeah.
And she was actually the strongest thing on that show.
Sure.
The panel was okay. And sometimes some of the reporters they had doing stories were actually pretty weak.
Okay.
But she herself was good. But she always probed and got some good insight.
Doing what she's supposed to be doing.
Yes, exactly.
And of her like, yeah.
But, and then George Stephanopoulos is back on there or whatever.
Oh.
It was such a stain I didn't watch the first episode. And then I watched it this Sunday and they had Stephen Colbert on. And
this past Sunday?
Yeah. Yeah.
I am so downloading that podcast.
Okay, yeah. So, and he actually was interviewing Stephen Colbert as his persona, which is... kind of funny and also, you know, just pretty, but it's totally like without, you know, content really, right?
Oh, okay.
But it's like, and that just, I guess, shows the difference between that show and, like, Meet the Press, right? Because even, you know, Stephen Colbert, when he was on Meet the Press, I forget, maybe a year or so ago, he was Stephen Colbert, the actor. And it was actually quite a probing, fascinating interview.
That's cool. Because, you know, I didn't even know if that was possible.
Yeah.
It's like, can anyone really do that with Robin Williams? Like, is it even possible?
Because
you know what I'm getting
at. Yeah.
Well, that's cool. I'd like to check that out.
And I have to say, I, as much as I loved Christiane Amanpour, I was starting to like Meet the Press holistically as a better show.
Sure.
Because as much as I'm not a big fan, I wasn't a big fan of David Gregory when he started hosting it after Tim Russert, who I thought was really good at what he
really
did.
Really good, yeah.
David Gregory has impressed me over the last month or so. Like, he does sort of, he keeps, you know, like, basically, I'm sort of not saying it verbatim, but he basically goes to his guests and go, come on, are you really serious? No, he says that often, right?
Good.
And I like it. Like, I'm impressed with him. So, yeah. So anyways, that's my little, you know, diatribe about television shows or news television shows.
Well, yeah, like, it's really good to hear about stuff like that, right? Like almost like Hardball-like, you know, like, they're just, they need to probe, they need to prod, almost, you know? So that's really cool. Super, super shocked about... Super shocked to hear that Christiane Amanpour was let go of that. But if they've got someone in there who's going to do the job, then great. I guess that's the important thing. But hopefully we'll see where she lands. Maybe she'll.
They know where she's landing. She's back to CNN, but also going to do stuff for ABC still. So,
right, and we're noticing that with, like, say, Anderson Cooper,
right,
does stuff for CNN, but yet he's also on 60 Minutes.
Yes,
and now he's also got his date. I don't know how he does it. There must be like 10 Anderson Coopers. You know what I mean? Like they had a bunch of Saddam Husseins.
Right.
Sorry, I'm not equating the two, but...
But you just did.
So, I want to get your thought on something.
Okay.
My first item was the Liberal Party of Canada.
Yes.
Because they're going through this so-called renewal stage where they're trying to rebuild the party. They had a big convention where they swore in their new, chosen their new party president.
Who wasn't Sheila Copps.
Who was not Sheila Copps, which I have to say is I'm pretty excited about that.
I was surprised.
Were you?
Yeah, just
well,
because...
she only lost by 26 votes or something.
Oh, I see. I didn't know what the result was, but I just, you know, the Liberal Party is pretty traditional, and they like to marinate in the past quite a bit.
They do.
And so I just kept thinking, well, they're going to totally choose Sheila Copps. So actually, I was quite surprised. And it says a lot about, you know, maybe hopefully where the party might be going by just not defaulting to that. But not to say that, I mean, I don't really, I mean, I've got opinions, I guess, about Sheila Copps, but nothing so negative or so positive that it really would make a difference to me, you know?
Well, that's the thing. Like, I don't mind her at all. It's just, I just don't think she's right. I think she's a person from the past, kind of a controversial past. With the statements she's made and the way she's done things, that it's like, if this, I think she wasn't chosen because if this, well, she was almost chosen. I shouldn't say this was like a conscious decision because it was actually pretty divided.
Right.
But she didn't win. And it's probably, I think it's probably a good thing because she's obviously part of an older, I mean, she first was in the Commons in like the mid 80s. Like, she's been a part of this party and been a part of those governments that were fractured for like a long time. If they want to be all about renewal, why are they going to keep having these old familiar faces? Which brings me to what I want to ask you about is Bob Rae.
Sorry, I'm drinking, but that wasn't because... But yes.
You know, I thought a lot of... I'll tell you what I think first, maybe, while you're throwing back that water.
Delicious.
And that's... At first I was like, you know, like, he's a name of the past. I mean, he's been in politics forever. Not only as part of Liberals, but NDP and very controversial figure. But then I started thinking, well, there are a couple things. One, who else is there, really, frankly? Trudeau's not ready yet. And there needs to be even way more time between his father and him. And also, Bob Rae's probably actually the right person for the job, taking away everything else about it. his baggage.
Sure.
Not familiar, overly familiar face, name from the past. I actually think he's probably the most qualified and the most effective, to be honest.
Right.
And most open to new ideas. So I thought, well, you know, they're kind of, they may be shooting themselves in the foot, because, you know, they're like gonna, if they end up sticking with this guy, they end up bending the rules, or they, he quits interim leader and then he comes back, because he has to, 6 months before they have the leadership race, he has to quit as interim to be able to enter
right
that contest.
Right. Okay.
So my thought is, well, until we see otherwise, he might actually be the best person for the job, but I want to see what you thought.
Well, it's interesting. I mean, I don't think it's my opinion, but it's generally accepted fact that that Bob Rae is pretty much serving as the official leader of the opposition.
Sure.
I mean, when you think about anything that ever comes up in the comments, or even when it's not in the comments, and some government policy, like somehow equating that same-sex marriages in Canada by foreign-born people are not marriages. Did you hear that whole thing right the other
yeah,
week?
Yeah.
And who does the news go to first to say a reaction to?
Bob Rae. Yeah, you're right.
And you know, and it's clear, everyone sees it. I mean, I'm not some sort of clairvoyant or astute political analyst to say that, right? And people have said, you know, and you think about, you know, the ad issue panel on CBC, they were talking about, you know, the biggest strategic errors or something from the last year. And a lot of it is keeping Nicole Trammell, interim leader of the NDP, because, you know, all of that fervor of Jack Layton and the official opposition win and has just disintegrated.
Yeah.
And, I mean, as much as the Republican Party has a debate for the candidates every 2 days, and there was that one where they had it on Saturday night and Sunday morning.
That's right. I was like, huh?
Is, you know, the NDP is doing the exact opposite. They took forever to have one.
Yes.
And then they've just had one.
They're having one this month, but it's how many months is that in between?
Yeah.
Like 2 months.
So it's crazy the kind of they're way erring on the other side.
Yes, I agree.
And so no one talks about the NDP.
No.
I mean, there's a few critics that they quote, which is good. I'm glad, but and that's all because of Bob Rae, really, and his skill, his oratory.
Yes.
And as much as you want someone to be, you know, bilingual or and so forth, at least we're seeing this in the English media. I've never seen any clip of Nicole Trammell in months saying anything of substance at all.
And the only time we hear about her is criticism of her.
Yeah, it's true. Like, yeah. And see, and I'm not watching French news, so I would hope, but I don't know either way, that, you know, every time they show the news and talk about federal politics in Quebec or French language news media, they do quote her. They quote her a lot, and maybe she's fierce in when she debates or asks questions in question period in French. But I've never seen it, and I don't know. I hope that's the case. But even then, population-wise, you know, what's the population that are English-speaking and watch English news versus the percentage of the population are French, right? So I know it's not 50-50, although maybe if you're generous, a good percentage of the population speak some French.
Oh, yeah.
But they're not necessarily going, like, I would fall into that, and you would fall into that category, but we're not rushing to watch French media.
No.
Right? So. No.
And that's the thing. If she's going to be on French media, it's going to be about probably more Quebec-centric concerns anyway. Well, that's interesting you mentioned. And, you know, on one hand, Parliament hasn't been in session for quite some time. They're probably going to come back next week, I think. So, you know, maybe we'll hear more about it. People have gotten over the holidays, the New Year's, all this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Time has passed since Layton's passed away, you know, a few months now. So maybe when they come back to Parliament, maybe we'll see more of her trying to make a dent. But really, I mean, every article's been about, like, how she's she was a card-carrying member of the Bloc and all this kind of stuff. Like, that just doesn't go away, that stuff. But that brings me to another point, a quick one, that I thought of you when I read about it. It's this dual citizenship stuff. Because apparently Thomas Mulcair has... he's a citizen of France as well as Canada.
Okay, sure.
And I looked... Well, I didn't look into it, but I came across something really interesting. Was the only reason he has a France citizenship is because he was able to get one through his wife, who's from there or something, and has worked there.
Sure.
And there's this thing with France that you, as spouse, after... If you can show that you can speak French well enough... And after being married for like 5 years or something, you're allowed to apply for citizenship through your spouse, believe it or not.
Okay.
So that's what he's done, like 20 years ago.
Sure.
Well, others are calling him out for this.
Sure.
Because Jack Layton did it when Stéphane Dion was the opposition leader, and he also has a French citizenship. And Jack Layton said at the time, well, I think it's appropriate for someone, a leader of a major party or a prime minister, should have one citizenship.
Right.
And obviously Harper agrees with that. But then Bob Rae's come out and said, well, you know, this is really silly because just because you have more than one citizenship doesn't mean you're not Canadian. He's totally entitled to have two citizenships, but what remains to be seen is if he's going to bow to Harper's argument, or if he's gonna bow to the irony that he wants to hold on to it, even though Layton didn't think it was appropriate for Dion to hold
right.
You know, like that kind of thing, right?
Yeah, you know, but I think that's. I mean, we live in the real world, not what is it? Case law.
Yeah.
Just because one person says it for one case doesn't mean it's the rule for life.
Right.
Is my opinion. So I don't really... to me, it's irrelevant what Jack Layton said 8 years ago. And everyone knows politics. You take whatever dig you can take, right?
Yeah.
And so it's, you know, for me, you know, at least I believe that. But I don't think... Like, my gut is I don't care. Like, and my personal opinion is...
Yeah, right.
Is so what? Have two citizenships. And maybe, you know, it shouldn't prevent him from running and prevent him from winning the leadership, let's say. But then if he gets the leadership and if he wants to make a gesture and says, you know, I want to just, you know, assure the Canadian public that I am Canadian through and through, I'm going to, you know, relinquish my citizenship in France, my French citizenship, I wouldn't be against it either if he feels that's something to do. But I wouldn't say it's necessary.
You wouldn't demand it.
Yeah, because I just think we live in I don't want to use the term, we live in a global world, but we do, right?
We really do.
And that's very protection. It's very dangerous to have that, you know, it creates an us versus them thing. Yes. And I don't like us versus them as a kind of concept holistically, right? But
right.
At least that's my thought.
No, that's a good point. I thought that was an interesting issue. So,
but... But to get back to your original question about, you know, Bob Rae, I don't think he should run.
Really?
Yes.
Do tell. How come?
I think it would be the easy way out. Because you're right.
Okay.
He's the best choice right now. There's no one clearly in the public view who could do it. But I think the Liberals need to think deeper and think longer and think harder and try to find quality candidates that you may not have heard of. I mean,
sure.
You know, no one knew Jack Layton, you know,
that's
except
true.
For people in Toronto. And then he became the leader. And then we all made fun of him for 5 years or so that he was a used car salesman until he finally found his stride. And the Liberals need to be patient. And they need to find that kind of a next leader, not Jack Layton, but in that sort of way.
Yeah.
Because otherwise you're never going to move forward. And you'll never really ask yourself the tough questions. Oh, great, we're going to solve that Bob Rae's going to be our leader. Perfect. I can see how tempting that can be.
Sure.
And the only other thing is I feel that they would just be trying to right a mistake they made years ago when they elected Stéphane Dion, the leader. Not that I have anything against Stéphane Dion, but when they that was the last day, they went through a really long, really public, really enthusiastic leadership race.
That's right.
You know, and Ken tried it, laughably tried. You know, and jeez. And if you why is the thing always ringing when we're doing podcasts? That's hilarious. I'm gonna keep this running, but I'm gonna turn off the ringer.
Okay.
But that's kind of funny. So we'll have to either edit that or leave it on.
No, we'll leave it on.
We'll figure it out. That's the second time this happened to us.
You know, I think I edited it out last time.
Did you? Okay.
I think.
You'll have discretion of whether or not you want to edit it out.
It was kind of fun, actually.
It was, I think, it looks like it's just one of those telemarketers.
Of course.
That's what happens when you still have a landline.
Yeah. Well, I was going to say, wow, what is that?
That's a landline. But anyways, to get to my point, like it would just be saying, oh, you know, we're going to bring Bob Ray because he could have totally won it 5 years ago or whatever that was when Stefan Dion won. Because when I was watching all of that, I mean, yeah, Ken Dryden was laughably dry.
Sure.
Stefan Dion, I just, you know, he didn't have that sort of charisma. Neither did Gerard Kennedy or Ignatieff didn't at all.
Yeah.
But Bob Ray, I was really impressed when he did his closing speech or something at the convention, and he sort of held the mic and walked around. Like, I thought, wow, he's got that approachable presence. Yes, there are there is baggage, there is history there, but you could see that the leadership quality is there, right? But that's, again, 5-6 years ago.
Yes.
Right? And so it would just be, now it's trying to go back to 5 years ago or whatever it was, right? So that's my opinion.
Interesting. No, I think it's very valid, and I think, obviously, Bob Ray's aware of it.
But he's doing a great job now. Like, he is doing a stellar job right now.
I know. He has this knack for showing why, when a conservative says something stupid, why it's stupid in an eloquent way, right? Like, he just comes up with more than, we don't agree with that. He comes up with why it's wrong. And it seems like effortlessly, like he does it with finesse. And I think that's really cool. And, you know, you're probably right, Justin. Like, I think, you know, some people just get robbed, you know? Like, I think he got robbed 6 years ago. Dion, then Ignati. I mean, like, that whole time, they could have gone with Ray and may have been, and maybe we wouldn't have a conservative government right now. I don't know. Maybe one of the last two elections, they could have won it back. You know what I mean?
Right.
You know, maybe it could have been, like, the conservatives were only a minority government for, like, 2 years. And then in 08, they brought it back. Like, who knows?
Right.
But no, I think that's very valid. I guess we'll just see. It'll be quite interesting because it's going to be like a year and a half before they find the leader. Then after that, it's only going to be 2 years, and then boom, we're in election again, right?
Yep.
It'll just be. It seems like a long time from now, but it's not. In the political world, it's not.
No.
Like they're already trying to smear Bob Ray, right? But the way he comes back, you know, is awesome. Like he comes back. And he gives you this impression of he's not fazed by it. Where other leaders like Dion or whatever, you know, I like Stefan Dion actually, but I think he meant well and his heart was in the right place. But he would always show how bothered he was about their attacks.
Right.
And Ray doesn't seem to do that.
And so what do you think, Bob Ray, what do you feel, what's your opinion about how Bob Ray looks like in a Canucks jersey?
I'd rather look at Christy Clark in a Canucks jersey. I think that's better. That's what my opinion on Bob Ray in a Canucks jersey is.
Oh, sorry, I had to just...
Wait, why? Was he seen in one?
No. You were just waxing poetic so much around Bob Ray.
I know.
I was thinking, are we talking about Bob or are we talking about Christy?
It's weird. I know. And I keep thinking, like, you know, should we be... You know, I was pretty moved by, you know, like, the NDP's success in last... election, and I was really obviously moved when he passed away. I thought that was pretty hard to take, but Man, oh man. And I like some of the candidates that want to run for the leadership, but I just don't know. Like, I have this thought about it. Sometimes I think they can be quite ideological, but just on the other end.
Mm.
Without thinking, there's not enough, like, and what, you know, Bob Rae, like the traditional liberal party, like the pragmatic, and you know, like the practical.
Yep.
They're missing some of that too.
Mm.
But maybe that would naturally come if they did win. They would be obviously pulled into the center a little bit.
Mm.
Possibly. Anyway, yeah. So that's enough about that. But
okay, so you have another topic on your list.
Yeah, well, I wrote it down because, you know, we were talking at our faux dinner about the fact that, you know, we decided to do a podcast today after, you know, a few weeks off. And today was a major announcement that President Obama rejected the Keystone XL
pipeline. Yep.
Rejected the pipeline as it currently stands, the plans for it. And he said, no, because it's too sensitive ecologically in that stretch of Nebraska. You're welcome to reapply. So obviously, of course, they've probably given the inside word on that for a while now. But they're obviously reapplying. They're going to be reapplying within weeks of an alternate route to put this pipeline. So I just thought that was an interesting story because they delayed the decision, but it was kind of ambiguous, this ambiguous right. air to it, right? Like, when are we going to... Are they really going to wait until the next presidential election and after that to address it? But it turns out they were forced to now by that congressional bill. So the fact that he actually came out and just said what they want to do or not do, I thought was it's pretty significant.
Yeah, I mean, it's you know, it's been in the news quite a bit, and it's definitely, you know, has a lot of impact all over the place around jobs, around environment, and there's those competing interests, right? And it's fascinating, you know, when you think about sort of the economic collapse comes on the heels of the most environmentally aware period in our history, you know, and you're butting both up against each other, right? And,
right.
And I knew there was something about sort of that area in Nebraska, apparently, and they were trying to go around it, and they need to go around it in a different way, or whatever it was, but it's interesting because there's that pipeline, and then there's the pipeline going through to the Pacific Ocean through British Columbia, right? And it's just going through a whole bunch of public consultation at the moment, with various First Nations communities and bands, and, you know, one band in particular has been in favor for it. They've signed an agreement with a whole bunch of others haven't. And the conservative government sort of talking about environmentalists as being unpatriotic.
Radical.
And there's fears now from the environmental sector that they're going to have their charity statuses revoked because of 10% rules around charities acting only 10% of their activities being advocacy. And what qualifies for advocacy or not, and what's just, you know, pure public consultation or just public information, you know, and so it's kind of what I thought about that particular one, just moving away from the pipeline down to the States and the Obama decision, which is significant, was Stephen Harper trying to take very polarizing language and that you see and you hear in the U.S. quite regularly.
That's right.
And trying to throw it up here.
That's right.
And see if it will stick. And I pray and hope that the Canadian electorate and the Canadian public is a little bit wiser and a little bit less tolerant of us, tactics. Again, us versus them tactics,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
It's not clearly us versus them, thank you very much. Very few things are us versus them, unless you're watching the Canucks versus another team or some sporting league where that's how the rules are set, right? Like just because you're pro-environment doesn't mean you're anti-national, you know, fuel security or
that's
something.
Exactly.
Don't couch everything in the Canadian flag like...
Yeah,
like American politicians coaching the American flag and freedom. Like, I just don't, like, it left, just hearing it on the news gave me a really bad taste in my mouth.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, what are you trying to pull here? Like, don't dig us down into that kind of political rhetoric. Let's have a normal conversation about this, you know? And it just bugged me.
Oh, I know. I never thought I'd see a day where we had a prime minister that talked like that. Name a prime minister that spoke like that in the past. You can't.
Yeah.
There is just simply hasn't been one. And it's dismissive. It's condescending. It's arrogant. It's entitled.
People would argue Trudeau had a lot of that too, but you know, I would say, I mean, I'm sure it could be a valid criticism to say he was dismissive and arrogant, but I wouldn't say he was so I'd say he's polarizing, but I wouldn't say he wasn't as us versus theming as Harper does in a clear black and white kind of way. I think, you know, from my understanding of from what I know of Trudeau and his reputation, he was actually, you know, an academic, a clear thinker, you know, a thinking man's man kind of thing. But Harper doesn't come off that way at all. He does that in a very crass, very, you know, just think with your gut. Science doesn't really count. Or like, you know, facts are just, you know, information that's in the way.
Right.
You know?
I know. And, you know, I was watching a video just today. I'll try and find it again. It was on the Globe and Mail. Some person on TV was talking to this environment ecological professor from UBC.
Oh, okay.
About, you know, what he thinks is going to happen with all this stuff. And he was talking about he made some things that I hadn't really heard much of before, which is, one, there's going to be some real engineering challenges to get that pipeline underneath those coastal mountains and stuff. Oh.
Mm.
It seems like a lot of the hurt and the devastation potential to the environment is going to be in our province and not in Alberta.
Oh yeah, totally.
There's that, which, you know, is part of why I'm personally against it. But number two is they talk about this job creation, right? And he said, he put a number. He said in BC, it's 560 like long-term jobs. 560. Which he said was, quote, a drop in the bucket. I mean, obviously it counts for something, but it's
right.
But what the economic benefit is going to largely go to Alberta. We're going to get the most devastation and the least amount of economic benefit. We're going to get the tanker traffic, you know, like
right.
All these things. So I thought that was an interesting way to hear it from someone who's, you know, obviously highly educated, and he's an educator and very serious. Like, he's like, oh, hello. And he's like, hello, like very stern faced, very just stoic, you know,
right.
Just stating the facts, you know,
right.
I was like, wow, okay. So I don't know. I'm not for the pipeline personally, because of all those things I just mentioned. I think there's like over 700 water streams, different types that are going to be, this pipe is going to go underneath. I mean, they're talking about the salmon being affected, all these different fish species. It's, I don't know. They always talk about, and I think you mentioned this, I don't know if it was yourself or someone else, that whenever they do these big you know, like these big energy projects, like it was mining or whether it's whatever. Oh, and there's a lot of lakes too nearby that could be affected, like the water quality. They always talk about what, you know, like say replanting or regeneration or
right.
Just replenishing the earth, it never comes back as it was. It comes back as like a second cousin of what it was. You know what I mean? Mm. I don't know if that was you that was saying that.
Yeah, that doesn't sound like me. that's too wise for me.
Well, and I think that was drawn from a specific example of somewhere in the States where some big project was undertaken, but...
Mm.
So that got me thinking, you know, they always talk about, you know, like say in the oil sands, it's like in Alberta, it's like, oh, well, we've done this and we've done that. And look at all these trees we're replanting, and but the ecology is never quite what it was. You know, it's just some like a pseudo version of it, you know?
Right.
So that's what I'm kind of not happy about. And it's hard for me to even complain too, because I haven't been more north than like Revelstoke. You know what I mean?
Sure.
Like I've only been along the one as far as it takes you to Alberta or right. the Coquihalla or whatever.
Right.
So I haven't been up in those areas. You've been up in those areas.
Yeah, I mean, not hugely north, but north enough. And you know. But, you know, but I just don't think, I mean, just because you haven't been there doesn't mean it's part of our, it's not part of your backyard, right? It's part of all of us. We all have a stake in that part of our province, in that part of our country, you know? And it's just... Like, what I get frustrated on is just, it's all about the economics, and it's all about the jobs. Jobs can be created in a whole bunch of different ways.
Right.
You know, you can create value by creating value for paper that isn't really there, and, you know, like, all those derivatives, like, people earn millions of dollars. There's hundreds of millions of people who work in that financial industry, and not one piece of natural resource is being churned up from the earth, you know, or whatever, right? Yeah. Like it's, you know, I think the economics, you know, I mean, especially it's only 500 jobs. Every job's an important job, yes, but you know, you could probably create jobs in other ways, you know, like, and what it just sort of reminded me too, like there, it sort of says, well, it's the economy or something. Again, it's us and them, like. We've somehow forgotten that we are all interconnected in some way. And I'm not trying to be granola-y or, say kumbaya. But I think it's we're forgetting that we are part of a greater community and a greater society, which includes the earth, which includes the animals, which includes the human beings, which includes everything, you know. And I, as a colleague of mine has said this to me, I hadn't seen her in a while, and she... And I had lunch, and she had been to a conference in Ottawa, and she came back, and I was asking her how it was. It was just one of those very, very big community conferences, right? So it's that kind of people, you know,
right? Sure.
Which is people that we all really love, and they're great people. They do great work, right? And I always think about this phrase. It wasn't her quoting it. She said she was in a session, and someone in that session said this exact phrase, and everyone went like, "Oh." And the phrase was, you know, and this is an older gentleman, he's like, apparently he said, you know, when I grew up, I was told that I live in a community. But now, for some reason, I've been told I live in an economy.
Oh, you know? I know.
And it resonated with everyone in the room. It resonated with me, and it resonated with you just now. And it's so true. Like, we've forgotten that we live in a community. And for some reason... The economy is the one and be all thing, and it's only one part of it. I mean, it's the economy is the structure we've put in place to make everything else make sense, because there's money in exchange for something, and you get a service or you get a product, and you earn money for doing what you do that's productive. And I mean, that's the economic, you know, capitalistic structure we put in place, but that isn't who we are. That shouldn't be who we are, you know? And it boggles the mind that every decision of any value is decided upon the economics of it.
Yeah.
And there's much more to that, to life and to the human existence than the economy. I mean, it's more than a community as well. It's a whole bunch of other things. But anyways, yes.
Well, it's funny, it's totally true, because when they talk about, you know, this energy, national energy security or whatever, right? Well, we got to grow our own oil, because if we get oil from corrupt regimes like Venezuela, Iran, and like other Middle Eastern countries, right? It's like, no, I want oil from those corrupt, crazy countries, because I don't want to be like... That as soon as we start, I think, if we start, you know, really making these oil sands like the total end all be all of our economic, like all eggs in one basket, pretty much.
Yeah.
We start acting like those countries, and we destroy our resources and our environment doing it. And it's like, no, I want to suck them dry because their oil is actually less dirtier than ours.
Wow. That's a very different, interesting perspective. I hadn't even thought of it that
way. I want Chavez's oil. I want Aminajad's oil. Like, I want those fuckers' oil because...
You want to drink from their teat.
Well, I do. Because we have, and I mean we as in the West, have a hold on those countries anyway. There's no way we're not going to get their oil from them. They go to war to keep it flowing, right? So let's
wow,
just...
Wow, how that's so pragmatic of you. That's fascinating.
It is 3 times harder to extract the oil in Alberta than it is in Saudi Arabia. So it's why are we making this huge mess in Alberta and other areas of Saskatchewan and stuff where we're like raping the earth to get this oil going, and now we're gonna do this huge tunnel to through BC to get it to on a tanker to Asia. Why are we gonna do that when we can just get it from somewhere else for another few decades at least? And then in the meantime, why can't we focus on actually trying to generate alternative energy? Like, right. Some guy wrote in the Vancouver Sun that, I don't know if this is verified, but he just wrote this letter saying, in Germany, they've gone well beyond the Kyoto targets. They've, by 2005 or something, they had managed that the total energy source was from alternative energies in their whole country, and it will be 35% by like 2020 or something. So they're on track to actually totally overhauling their whole
right.
energy system. Well, we've only got like 35 million people or whatever. I know we're a bigger country land-wise,
mm-hmm.
but... It's not like we have 300 million people here that we're trying to, you know what I mean?
Right.
Like, I think, like, all these people like Patrick Moore, like the old former Greenpeace founder and leader. I don't know if you know of him, but.
Yeah, I know of him. Yeah.
Now he has his consulting agency on how to, like safe, like, environment, like energy initiatives for companies and stuff.
Oh, okay.
And all he talks about now is that we should be doing this because the energy security, and we shouldn't be grabbing oil from the Venezuelans and all this because they're corrupt. And it's like, well, it's kind of crazy to hear all that because, and he keeps saying it's a kind of a pipe dream to try and develop through wind power, solar energy, and all these other ways.
Really?
Yeah, there's a TED talk on it.
Okay.
I'll try and dig it up. But he talks about how, yeah, it might be like point whatever percent of energy that you can sustain in a community. But for a whole country, like it's, we could never just go, okay, we're going to switch over this alternative energy and just go off fossil fuels like that. Like he says, it's just not going to happen. And I appreciate the realism.
Right.
But at the same time, it's like, well, but we aren't even trying. Are we even trying? Like,
right. Yeah. No.
Like, have you ever heard the conservatives talk about alternative energy? Like, it's not even a vocabulary. And I think that's what the problem is, right? Like, they don't even want to think that way.
Yeah.
Anyway, so that's my last statement on it.
Hmm.
I've kind of gone on about it, but.
Wow. Yeah. Yeah.
God. It's kind of funny, right? Like, we're going to have, like, salmon drinking oil soon, you know, like swimming in oil soon, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah, well, you know, and I can think about, like, yeah, I mean, the oil goes through the pipes and then they get onto tankers, and then I guess we don't care if the tanker runs aground in international waters. Like, what you think about just happened in Italy with that cruise ship,
right? I know. Like,
it can happen anywhere. I mean, those little islands and rocky, you know, areas that you cut through to get to the Pacific Ocean. Oh, yeah. Like, I mean, that ferry went down in, you know, on the way on down the Inside Passage, right? I mean, was it 5-6 years ago, right? I mean, it can happen. North. Yeah.
Yeah.
Right? So, anyways, like, yeah. We could go on
and on. We could go on. But I'm glad we hashed that out. But yeah. I feel better now.
But I feel good.
Yeah.
We're at a good time, I think. You know.
Yeah, I think this was great. It was semi-serious, but I think thought-provoking, perhaps, dare I say.
You dare, and you did.
That I did.
Perfect. So we will get this, endeavor to get this online as soon as possible, as we always do. I'm always the one who delays again, but it'll get done.
It'll get done. This month it will get done. You have 12 days.
Starting tomorrow.
Oh, I'm such a bad person with that.
Well, that's good. Thanks for listening. And if you are listening, thanks to our 5 listeners.
Yes. TheDotMatrix.com. You find us on Facebook as well. I think, do we have Facebook.com/TheDotMatrix?
We do, because we got our 25 likes.
Right, we did. That's right.
So.
And, of course, find us on iTunes. Search for The Dot Matrix and we'll be there.
Yes.
And otherwise, until next time we record.
Absolutely. Okay. Well, thanks very much.
You're welcome.